Just remember, like, canopies of pine trees and, you know, the smell of fresh cedar and the water, like, only a kilometer away, you know, the fresh air.
Evan Red Sky. I'm from Mississauga First Nation up just outside of Blind River, Ontario. It's about 6.5 hours north of Toronto on Highway 17. You know, I'm a songwriter first and foremost, but I also happen to be Indigenous. And I also happen to speak to those issues. And it seems now more than ever that seems to be the most important work I've been doing. I didn't know people could write their own songs until I was probably 13 or 14. 14, I would say. Maybe grade 9. I joined my first metal band in grade 9. And, you know, we jammed. That was always a thing. I picked up a bass. I remember I cut lawns all summer one summer when I was in grade 6, going into grade 7. And I got myself my first bass guitar. I think it was like $100. And, you know, unbeknownst to my mother at the time, when she was out on the road working throughout the week, I would hitchhike to Sault Ste. Marie and go to a show. You know, I'd go see like Moaning or whatever sort of emo or like rock band was like rolling through town. So that it was at a very young age. I was hitchhiking all over the place between Sudbury, Sault Ste. Marie. Eventually I started coming to Toronto go to like hardcore and metal shows. And I was just obsessed, like, you know, got bit by the bug and I just wanted to be involved. And you know, I'm writing a hardcore record right now, like a metal record. With my Chippewa friend who I used to play in a hardcore band with. I didn't have that when I was a kid. I would have loved that. You know, when I got into punk rock, hardcore and all that, there was no Indigenous representation. It was all white guys, you know? So it's exciting. I'm just excited for 14-year-old me, you know? So, you know, I criticize myself all the time. I was like, I get so bored of this sort of soft boy tunes, you know. That's why I'm making this hardcore record right now. I need to let some other side of the anger, the angst, the frustration out.
My name is Emma Greenfield. Yeah, so Evan Red Sky is my partner. My title here at First Peoples at Seneca is Indigenous Curriculum Developer, but my role is a lot more than that. So I actually have been hired to develop curriculum for the School of Early Childhood Education. I was actually a student here at Seneca College, just graduated in April from the Bachelor of Child Development program. And since the summertime, I have been developing curriculum for the School of Early Childhood, just infusing Indigenous knowledges and stories and histories throughout the entire program. I'm very white. I look very white. I present as white. And I have to constantly ask myself how that whiteness feels on a day-to-day basis. I've been very privileged with that. And so there's a way that I can utilize that to my best of my abilities in order to be a part of a reconciliation between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. It's okay to self-identify and to be proud of who I am. You know, I'm predominantly of colonizer ancestry, and I could have spent my entire life not understanding what it means to have First Nations ancestors. And so I think that I have the privilege of being able to identify with both. I have a responsibility as a colonizer to be a part of reconciliation, but I also want to honor my First Nations ancestors as well within the process, and I feel really privileged to be able to do that. You know, we can't just stop at good enough. I don't think good enough is good enough at all. I think this is work that every single educator should be a part of across all colleges. I think it's something that every Canadian should feel responsibility for. But there's still a lot of stereotypes. There's still a lot of racism. There's still people that are struggling with with coming to terms with who they are as being something that's really quite beautiful. And
I live in a bubble. I live downtown Toronto. I live in a urban center. As much as we like to think that the rest of Canada could be like this, you don't have to go too far outside of the city to encounter or experience regressive behavior. And it's interesting to go home and, you know, you're sort of, you get that reminder, you get that subtle reminder that there are these transgressions from non-Indigenous Canadians about Indigenous people that they even don't even realize. I was just talking about this with my partner the couple nights ago. We were talking, she was asking me, it's like, how often have you been racialized? And I was going back about some of the first times, and times I didn't even consider, you know, I didn't know, I was too young to realize what was happening. But when we were just kids, you know, and like, one of your best friends, one of your homies you play hockey with, you know, who like, has probably heard this from their dad or their uncle or their brother or something, somebody in their family, and then they decide to try it, and they decide to feel how it tastes on their lips, you know, to call, you know, one of their own friends a dirty Indian. Well, let's just say it comes down to education. I didn't even know the history of my own people, you know, the Indian Act and sort of the systems in place that were meant to fail Indigenous people, you know. When I picked up that Danny Wolfe book a few years ago about the ex-leader of the Indian Posse, a street gang out of Winnipeg, I thought about like how my life could have easily have gone down that path, and how I actually, my oldest brother, for a brief period of time, his life did go down that path, and he was, you know, involved in, you know, gang banging on the streets of Winnipeg. And I just think about that, and I think that really fuels me and sort of the maybe how the vulnerability that Indigenous youth have to face that maybe non-Indigenous or certainly non-Indigenous Canadians don't even realize. So that's when I can see myself, I can put myself in this song, and I can really live inside of it. That's what inspires me. I can understand on one hand how hard it is to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, specifically Indigenous people in Canada, because of how hard it and how long it took me. So I think through my work and sort of my sort of personal mission is to make that a little more palatable, a little more accessible, just that knowledge. And I think we're getting there, you know.
I hear it in conversations, you know, they should just get over it, or even like, why do they deserve to have this Indigenous space? You know, I don't have a space that's as nice as their space, and what did they do to earn it? And I grew up with my grandmother, who was a First Nations activist. Her, I guess, call to action has always been about raising awareness about residential schools during a time that no one really was. So I remember she actually published a book that was required reading for a few universities across Canada. It was called Sing the Brave Song. And so this was a book that was published in 1997. So I was 7 years old at this time.
Your hair is a direct connection to your ancestors. And what the Indian agents did, and sort of the government when they live on the reserves, they really went out of their way to understand all these teachings and really understand all these intricacies of the way of life of Indigenous people, just to turn around and alienate them from it and pervert them on their own history. A really dear friend of mine, now she was a 60s scoop survivor. She was taken away from her parents in the 60s from her reserve, and it took her a while to retrace her roots and find her family again. But her foster parents remember her only arriving in a diaper and are being completely naked when she arrived, because the Indian agents and the people working in the foster care systems took all of her traditional clothing off, took all of her moccasins off, took all that and threw it away. And generally what they would do is they would burn all that. So when they'd gather the children, they would take them all back to the boarding school, and they would make them burn all their traditional clothing. So being able to just like go swimming whenever you want, you know, in fresh water, eating fresh fish, you know, the smell of fried bread, you know,
your auntie's lap. All that. My grandpa gave me a name when I was born, and it's Amik, and Amik in Ojibwe is beaver. If you know anything about the biology of a beaver, it's if it doesn't build and it doesn't make things and it doesn't constantly harvest the natural world around it, it'll die. Its teeth will grow so big that it'll die. And that's why beavers constantly have to be chewing on things. And it's funny, my grandpa gave me that name when I was a kid, because that's how I feel about art and creativity. And it's if I don't do it, like, just might as well end it all. You know, even within music, I wanted to be a part of this other scene that wasn't being indigenous, you know, and it gave me an escape of the realities of growing up on reserve, surrounded by addiction. Music was the escape. So sometimes it's a lightning rod, sometimes it's a slow paddle down a river, you know. So I think my proudest songs are the ones that just sort of flowed through me. And, you know, No Man's Land, that song, for as long as it takes to sing that song, was how long it took to write. And it was just, you know, something was speaking through me. And that song just happened. And that song's the most political song I think I've ever written. I'm really proud of that one. I think some of the best feedback I had from it was from one of my, you know, baby cousins, you know. He was like quite a few years, several years younger than me. He still lives up north on reserve, and he called me just out of the blue one time, and he said, you know, you're saying things that I feel, but I just don't have the words for, you know, you're speaking for a lot of us. So it's like the best feedback I can get, I guess.
Music is emotional. Music is spiritual, and it doesn't mean that it can't be mental as well, but it's certainly, there's a certain emotion to it that I think academia in general lacks. So I think the medium that Evan uses is really quite amazing, really quite special, because not only are people getting an earful of knowledge, but they're actually able to feel something. They're actually able to cry about it or to sit with it for a long period of time with how it made them feel. Both of our paths in life have been social justice, and maybe Evan wouldn't necessarily call himself an activist or even someone, or even like a social justice warrior, but the truth of the matter is that a lot of the times when Indigenous people speak about their own experiences, they are kind of indirectly becoming activists, which says a lot about society. You know, this is my genuine experience as a First Nations person, and yet it's coming off as I'm an activist person.
Take two.